We're going to bring up Parshas B'Shalach. Start your day in Torah in Manchester.
Good morning to you all, Rabbosai. This is a shiur taken from the writings of Rav Eliyahu Lapian, Zatzal in Lev Eliyahu, and it's all about the extra Mesiras Nefesh needed for the final Geula. And today we have Mara Mekoimus, because I'm going to refer to quite a number of psukim and rashis, and he draws out the meaning very nicely. He tells us, firstly, because mostly Rav Elia was talking to yeshiva bocharim and trying to be mezarez them in getting out what they could from the various seasons of the year, and he starts off by telling us about the business world, and in particular the clothing trade, where a manufacturer of clothing has to make sure that the winter collection are brought out on time. Because if you miss the last day where the winter collection is distributed to the shops, then you've missed it for that year, and you've got to wait until the next year. It occurs to me, and he says the same about the summer collection, of course, occurs to me that he himself lived in the East End of London and may have been quite close to the clothing trade and may have known something about it. So that's what he says, and in the same way as in the business world, so it is in the world of Ruchnius, that there are various seasons in the year where certain elements of Ruchnius can be brought out by the fact that we are in that particular season. So, for example, in Nisan, we have a Chizuk in Imuna, Enoin Milvadoi is the theme, and then in Elul, we have Yiras Hashem and Schava Oynish, and the Aseres Yimei Teshuvah, we have Tshuva, obviously, and so, therefore, we have in different seasons different accents on these themes. I remember sitting at the shir of Rav Montre Miller Zatzal, who used to give an example from Rabbi Dessler about the circle line. In the underground in London has a circle line. You can sit there all day, just going round and round and round. But if you get off at a station, particular station, you go up top, you see a certain architecture and a certain layout, and it's got its own character. If you go back into the train and then go round a bit to some other station and you go up and then you see completely different architecture, and he wanted to bring that as a moshel of how the year goes round and round and the different seasons come up and they all have a different reason and a different purpose. So let's go to the first of our references. And the Torah says, V'lochu min adom v'nosnu al shtei ha-mezuzos v'al ha-mashkov al ha-botim asher yoch le'oseh bohem. So there is this special command that we are to take the blood of the Korban Pesach and paint it on the doorposts. And that was a great act. We just carry on to the reference number 2, V'avarti beretz v'sraim b'laylo hazeh v'yikesi kol b'choy beretz v'sraim b'odem ha-behema. And I will see the blood, says the Rabbi Nishloilam, uposachti alechem veloyye bohem negev lemashchis ba'kois beretz v'sraim. That is the posuk that we say also in the Haggadah, etc. So we have those words, Veroisi es Hadom. And Rashi says on that, Veroisi es Hadom, and it's got a kasha. Hakoil Golui Lefonov. The Rabbi Nishalem knows everything. So what do you mean, Veroisi es Hadom? What does he mean by that? There's a special vision there? Yes. Ela Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Noisin Ani es Einai Lirois She'atim Asukim B'mitzvoisai. I will concentrate, I will focus on you, on Klal Yisrael, that you are being oisek in my mitzvahs. When I see that blood, then I'll know that you're being oisek, or poseach, ani aleichem, and therefore you will be exempted from the Negev that I'm going to visit upon Egypt. So it's clear that the blood on the doorposts, on the mezuzahs, was the schus by which Klal Yisrael is going to be saved. And it's not the korban which the Rebbe Shalom knows about already, but this is the schus. And we want to examine what actually is the schus that we are being given. What is the schus of the blood on the doorposts? And we're now talking this part of the Sedra after the Makas Oroiv, so we're quite far in to the psukim here. So we have a look at the next posuk that we get. A request from Paroi. Vayikro Paroi el Moshe ula Aroin vayoymer lechu zivcho ela lechechem lebaoretz. Go, take your sacrifices, go make some baoretz, but you're going to do it here. Vayoymer Moshe loy nochoin lases kain. It is not appropriate to do it in town. Ki toyavas Mitzrayim nizbach laHashem elokeinu, because it would be an abomination to the Egyptians. They would be sorely insulted if we did that in the middle of town. Hey Nisbach, es toyavas Mitzrayim le'inehem, can it possibly be that we would bring this sacrifice, and we know it's a sheep, in town, le'inehem, in full sight of the Egyptians, v'lo yiskelunu, you know, they're going to lynch us. You think they were not going to stone us if we do that? We take their God and we actually do it in the middle of the town. They are going to stone us. They're going to lynch us, says Moshe Rabbeinu to Paro. So we can't do it here. So that's a very interesting statement that Moshe makes. What? Well, this is Paro. This is a conversation between Paro and Moshe. Moshe, yeah, remember, at the beginning it's Yikro Paro El Moshe, it's not Kodesh Baruch Hu speaking. Right, so Paro is suggesting, okay, you can have your korbanos, but you do it here, in town. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, oh no, in town, there's no way we're going to do it in town, they're going to stone us. The Egyptians are going to stone us. And Revelian makes a very interesting remark here, that we are talking about the period of time following four Makkas. We've already had four Makkas, and the Egyptian people are sort of brought to their knees by now. You know, they're very, very frightened. And a person can be very frightened. And nevertheless, if you interfere with something that's very valuable to him, for example, a thief in the house, one should not know of this, thief in the house, and you see him actually taking the watch, that very precious heirloom that you had from your grandfather, great-grandfather, and maybe you'd let him get away with all the other stuff, but that particular item is so near and dear to you, you might get up and fight him. You might actually, you know, he crossed the red line. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying that even though the Egyptians are already cowed into more or less submission after four Makkas, if we do that, they're going to rise up and stone us. They've got to find the energy to do that, despite the fact that they are in a predicament. So we understand this mitzvah that we're going to do with the dam is a tremendous mesiras nefesh on behalf of Yisroel. And of course that's the hemshich of the following. Vayikra Moshe, item number 5. Vayikra Moshe l'chol ziknei Yisroel vayoyma aleihem Mishchu ukechu lochem tzoin limishpachoy seichem v'shachatu haposach. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells Klal Yisrael, Mishchu ukechu. And Mishchu, this word means draw near towards you. But Chazal tell us in item 5a that Mishchu means Mishchu yudeichem me'avodah zorah. There's a very interesting English parallel here. You can draw and withdraw. It's almost the same word. One is the sort of opposite of the other. And that's what Chazal tells us that Mishchu here means. Mishchu, on the one hand, Poshut Pshat is take the sheep towards you. Draw the sheep towards you. But in drawing the sheep towards you, you're doing something which is an act, which is an expression, a statement, that I'm withdrawing from the Avodah Zorah. So I take this sheep and now I'm going to use it for Korban Lashem, rather than what it was used for in the past, which was an Avodah Zorah. So therefore, by drawing the sheep towards me as a Korban Pesach, I'm withdrawing from the Avodah Zorah. So we've got those two ideas here in the Pasuk, which is the Mesiras Nefesh that we require here. So what was needed here was not just a sort of statement that we are going to take the sheep and we're going to do with it what we must do. In other words, taking the sheep is the act of Mishchu Yudeichem Me'avodah Zorah. If there was any guilt, any feelings of guilt on behalf of Klal Yisrael, that they were, after all, involved in the Egyptian gods. And may I just say, make a statement of mitigation on behalf of the Jewish people. If you go to the British Museum in London, they have a Department of Egyptology, right? And they've got lots and lots of artifacts from ancient Egypt, amazing pieces, actually. There's even a brick there that dates back from about 3,000 years, a brick with little bits of straw sticking out of it. Last week, Cedra told us that when the Eden made bricks, they had to now collect the straw. So that means that, in other words, in those days, they made bricks with clay and straw. Anyway, it's there under the glass case of the British Museum, if you're interested. But, when I was taken on a tour of British Museum by that particular part, by somebody who knows a lot about it, he pointed out that all the little symbols that you see everywhere on the Egyptian artifacts, they're all names or pictures of gods of one sort or the other. They've all got to do with it. In other words, what we have is a nation where there's gods everywhere. They had them all over the place. And the Eden had to turn up to work every day. Yeah, they had to clock in to an Egyptian house and they had to do the dusting, whatever they did. And everywhere they went, they saw these gods. Now we're talking about people who were there for 8 generations. Fathers, grandfathers, great-grandfathers, 8 to 210 years makes 8 generations. So in other words, for 8 generations, for 210 years, they kept on having these influences of these gods. They couldn't help it. So Lo Yemole, they obviously had to do what the Egyptians did when they knelt down. Presumably they also had to kneel down. You can't have the master kneeling down and the slave standing up. So they had to do all these mises, etc., during their workplace and during their work times. And therefore they can be forgiven for being drawn in to the habits of the Egyptians. So I think we can say a sort of a word of mitigation, even though, of course, as we know later on, the Malachim said, Elu, both of them, the Egyptians and Klal Yisrael, they both worshipped Avodah Zorah and tried to put it forward as an accusation. Nevertheless, we, I think, can say that the Eden didn't do it voluntarily. They did it as sort of in the course of their work and their involvement with the Egyptians. So the withdrawal of this Avodah Zorah and the taking of the sheep was a very important part of the cleansing of Klal Yisrael from these influences of the Avodah Zorah. And therefore, this is symbolized by the painting of the blood on the doorposts. And what was required here was an act of defiance. In other words, the Egyptians had to know that the Yidden are no longer involved in these Avodah Zorah. They're no longer going to mach mit with the Egyptian theology, etc., and their habits. We are going to do something that takes us away, that completely shows and demonstrates our rejection of your Avodah Zorah. So this is the total rejection of Avodah Zorah, and that was great Mesiras Nefesh. We already learnt that Yiskelunu, that they might be in danger of being stoned. So this was achieved by painting the dam on the doorposts. And so now, no Negev for Klal Yisrael. So Rabbi Shalom says, when I go around in Egypt and I am going to bring my Magephas on the Egyptians because I see what you're doing on your doorposts, you'll be saved, you will not. That's why we call it Pesach, because the Rabbi Nishom hops over our houses because we have the dam on the doorpost and therefore we won't suffer the Negev. Now, Rav Elia tells us that it is a chok in Shomayim it is one of the laws on which heaven operates, is that in order to receive a rescue, to get a salvation, which is lemala b'derech hateva, the only way you can be zoicha for that ness, for that special activity of the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is lemala b'derech hateva on your behalf, is for you to do something lemala b'derech hateva. So it's all a question of midah keneged midah. Midah keneged midah dictates that if you want Ribbono Shel Olam to do something special for you, you've got to do something special for him. And that's true, midah keneged midah, we know, works for good or ill. It works both ways. Yeah, so someone prepared to do something which is lemala b'derech hateva, and there cannot be something more lemala b'derech hateva than risking your life. Life is something that we cling on to under all circumstances. It's the most basic human sort of instinct to preserve one's life. If one's prepared to give one's life up for something, then that is an act which is lemala b'derech hateva, and therefore, as a reward to that, he receives something in kind. So Ribbono Shel Olam will do something lemala b'derech hateva. And we know exactly what that is, and of course that's in the coming week, Sedra, which is Kriyas Yamsuf. Now let's move to Kriyas Yamsuf. So we've gone from Boy, and we're moving into Beshalach. This particular shir spans both of these Sedras, and I think Sunday morning is probably the appropriate time to do it, because you're just in the afterglow of Boy, and we're already preparing Hayayim Yom Rishon of Parshas Beshalach, so it's exactly the right time to talk about this. Let's move to Kriyas Yamsuf. And there it says, Azai, Uparoi Hikriv, Vayisu Bnei Yisrael Eseinehem. Paroi is approaching, he's getting nearer, and Klal Yisrael, look out, they see Mitzrayim pursuing them, and they are terribly afraid. And Klal Yisrael daven, they cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayomru el Moshe, Hamibli ein kvorim b'Mitzrayim, are there not sufficient number of graves in Mitzrayim? You've got to bring us here. Lakachtonu lomos b'midbo. A very, very enigmatic statement, a very strange statement. Okay, they're in fear of their lives, we can understand it. Yeah, the Mitzrayim are coming, fully armed with their chariots, etc. We know the story. And Klal Yisrael look out, and they see the Mitzrayim coming towards them with their war engine, and they're very afraid. But there's more. Rashi tells us that there is more than that. What did they mean when the Torah says that they were pursuing them? That they had one mission. They were very, very focused. Believe echad ki ish echad. Homework, if you like. Yeah, by Har Sinai, it says ki ish echad, believe echad. You've got to find out what the difference is between those two. Here we've got believe echad, ki ish echad. The Balei Hashgofa say, yeah, a pshat in what the difference is. But what I want to tell you is the Dovah Ache in Rashi. Rashi says, Noise Achareim means, V'hini Mitzrayim, Noise Achareim, Ro Sar Shel Mitzrayim, Noise Min HaShemayim, La Zoyel Mitzrayim. This was the most terrifying part. The army, they knew, could be dealt with. Army's against them, and the Kodesh Baruch is on our side, so we deal with the army. The Rabbi Shem deal. However, the Sar Shel Mitzrayim, that is, the spiritual entity of Mitzrayim, Noise Achareim, it seemed that too was on the side of the Mitzrayim and not on the side of Klal Yisrael. In other words, Shemayim was acting against Klal Yisrael as well. And this is terrible. So, Bishloim is something on earth that's acting against us. We look up to Shemayim, we look up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say a tefillah or two, and we hope we will actually get redemption. But when Shemayim is against us as well, that the Sar Shel Mitzrayim is also up there riding against us, we are really in trouble. And that's why Vayirumoid, that's why they were so very, very frightened. And Vayoyim Moshe Elohom Al Tiror. Moshe reassures the people and says, Al Tiror. And that's the situation of the people. It's compared, Rav Elia compares it to a Yoina, a little dove, a delicate little dove, and all of a sudden he sees a hawk swooping down on him. And what does he do? What does the dove do? It creeps into the crack in the rocks to try and protect itself from the hawk. and he gets into the rocks, and there, inside the building, on the other side, is a snake which rears up and hisses him. So this little dove is sort of jammed between the rocks, they say in America, between a rock and a hard place. They really are. In Mitzrayim on the one side, and the desert on both of the sides, they really are in a very, very difficult situation. And they could see what was going on exactly with Mitzrayim. They could see exactly that they were in a great amount of trouble. And this is their situation. Any wonder that they're frightened? It is absolutely natural. The point is, says Aurelia, it's all a big test. That's what it's all about. Will they stand firm? Will they, despite the predicament that they find themselves in, will they stand firm? And the next pasuk that I'd like to bring is Vayizaku el Hashem Mnei Yisrael. That's Hamibli, they actually complain. And for this reason, because they said, Hamibli in Kvorim b'Mitzrayim, they complained and actually wobbled a bit. They didn't stand firm. And they turned on Moshe and said, what, he brought us here to die here in this miserable place? They needed another test. They needed more Mesiras Nefesh in order to pass that test. Let's have a look at reference number 8. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, ma titzak elai? Why are you crying? Why are you davening to me? Davel b'nei Yisroel v'yisol. Speak to the b'nei Yisroel v'yisol. Let them go. Let them move. V'ato hore mismatcho neteis yodcho al hayom ubokehu. You hold up your stick and stretch it out over the waters, and it will split. Vayavayu b'nei Yisroel b'toich hayom b'yabosho. And Klal Yisroel entered into the sea by Yabosha. Now notice, Yom first, and then Yabosha. We first have a mention of the sea, and then it became Yabosha. And that will become important in a minute or two. That the first we have Yom. In other words, we have Klal Yisroel, which went into liquid water. That means they went into the sea, which then became Yabosha. And Rashi says on this, Ma titzak elai. So this is a very interesting pasuk. There's Moshe Rabbeinu davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're boxed in between the Midbar on both sides, the Egyptians behind us and the Yom in front of us. This is a very difficult situation. I think you'll agree. And so Moshe's davening. And the Rosh Hashanah says to Moshe, Ma titzak elai. Why are you davening? And this is so strange, because we are always taught, you know, if you're in trouble, the place to go is to Beis HaMedrash. Marti Tzakelai, Zok Rashi, Lo Madnu, Shoyam Moshe, Oymed Mespalel. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, Marti Tzakelai, must mean that he was Titzakelai. He was davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Omaloi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Loi Eis Atol Harech Betfila. This is not the time to give a long davening, to have a long davening. It's not a time to daven at all, in fact. She Yisroel Nesunim Batsora. Now all the Balei Hashkafa, including Rav Eli and Alshia, pick that up and are wondering, what does Rashi mean? What does it mean that we are Batsora? Rashi says that Agbar Yisroel is telling Moshe, Klal Yisroel are Batsora, and you are standing davening. So what is it that he was doing wrong? Surely that is absolutely the right thing to do in such a situation. So when we have a tzora, Klal Yisroel are taught to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And of course Moshe Rabbeinu did that, just that, lots and lots of times. He did that. So the Baruch Hashem says, no, now is the time, v'ata hore mismatcho. This is the time that you need action. Not davening, but action. And what you've got to do is a stupendous act of Mesiras Nefesh. Throw yourselves into the sea. Be your soul. Just tell them to travel. This is not the time to daven. Why? Because Klal Yisrael needs another schus. They need the schus of the Mesiras Nefesh in order to have the final salvation. And when they went into the Yam, then it became Yabosho. It's in that order. This pasuk tells us, first Yam, then Yabosho. And so therefore, we know the story. Nachshon, and according to some opinions, the whole of Shevet Yehuda, walked into the water, and the water came up to their knees, and then it came up to the tabor, to the middle, and they kept on walking, and it came up to their neck, and they just about had their head above water until Bo Mai Mad Nefesh, you know, this water is going to drown us. At that moment of Bo Mai Mad Nefesh, they were prepared to give their lives in order to walk into the water. Vayibakeo Ayom, that's the moment in which the sea split. That's the moment of truth where Klal Yisrael came out up trumps, yes, with flying colours. And so therefore we have another example of Midah Keneged Midah. Rabbi Shalom is watching us. You're prepared to do something of Bo Mai Mad Nefesh. I'm prepared to do the miracle of something completely unnatural like splitting the sea. So the Tzora is not Lemata. The Tzora is always in Shemayim. That's why they were so scared when they saw the Sarshal Mitzrayim fighting on the behalf of the Mitzrayim, or so it seemed, that the Mekadrigin, the people who are accusing us in Shemayim, they are the ones that make trouble for us. If we do the right thing down here, then we shut the mouth of the Mekadrig upstairs. And when they said Amibli Kavorim, then they lost it for a second, and their record is not too good, because they also said Kitoiv Lanu of a Mitzrayim Mimusin Bamidbar. It's another pasuk. So there are another number of examples. And we know that Malchusa Da'ara, that the Malchusa, what happens down here, the courts down here, is Ken Malchusa de Shemayo. That up there, they're also prosecutors. They're also people who are accusing, or Malochim, they're accusing. And the prosecutor must be heard. You can't shut his mouth stumped. There's got to be a reason. And he had a valid case, because as we mentioned before, the Malachim Tainud, Halolo Avodah Zorah V'Halolu. They're both in the sea at this time, both together. Why should you save the Yidden and drown the Egyptians? Halolo Avodah Zorah V'Halolu. Despite my attempt to try and mitigate the guilt of Klal Yisrael. Nevertheless, the Malachim said, Lemais, that they've done Avodah Zorah. So we needed to redress the balance. We needed to bring the balance back in our favour. And with the act of supreme Mesiras Nefesh, walking into the water, that Dabel B'nei Yisrael V'Yisol, tell Klal Yisrael, let them travel now. Now's the time to travel. Now's the time to move forward. Now is the appropriate case. And now you can shut the mouth of the Kategor. This is the way to do it, by an act of Mesiras Nefesh. However, we've still got a couple of psukim, that one of them which is Vayavoya b'nei Yisrael b'soicha yom b'yabosho v'hamayim lohem choyma, and the mayim formed a wall, and this choyma is spelt with a vav, notice, miyamino m'smoinim, on the right and the left, it formed a wall. And here we have that posuk, which is their schus, which is water first, and yabosho second, which is they walked into the water, and the mayim became a choyma for them. And it refers to Shevet Yehuda, etc., jumped into the sea. However, we have another pasuk. If you have a look at number 11, we have a Bnei Yisrael holchu bayabosha b'soich hayom. Here we have a pasuk right afterwards, which says they walked into the dry land, which was in the middle of the water. The water had already formed into walls. So which is it? Is it Yom and then Yabosha? Or is it Yabosha and then Yom? And the answer is that it's Yom and Yabosha for Nachshon and Shevet Yehuda. They did this supreme act of Mesiras Nefesh. But there were others who hung back and had a look at what was going to happen. And when the water split and became Yabosha, then they decided to go. And that's the second pasuk, which says first Yabosha and then Yom. Notice that where the pasuk said before v'amayim lehem choyma with a vav, this time we have v'amayim lehem choyma miyaminam v'mismoilam without a vav. That word can be read also another way. Choyma without a vav can be read in Sefer Torah, and I've written out the Sefer Torah here, by the way. I've copied the Sefer Torah, and the last line, number 12, is what's in the Sefer Torah, and you can see that the word is choyma. Yeah, chema, ches, mem, hey, spells out chema in the Torah. So you can see the Sefer Torah writing there. Yeah? Just wanted to prove the point that it wasn't just a little sort of sleight of hand. That it really is in the Sefer Torah. It's there. So, in other words, Chazal tell us that in the first place, when the Mesiras Nefesh was performed, then we got chema, we got walls proper, etc., and that was a schus for them. when we did it a second time, and the rest of Klal Yisrael followed on, and they needed Yabosha, and they didn't just do that Mesiras Nefesh, so there was a bit of Chema. You're still doubtful, still hanging back. An element of Chema there as well. So a little bit of Kidruk. So this is the idea, this is the lesson. Rav Elia in his Shir ends off with a little bit of Musa for Yeshiva Bacharim. And very appropriately, that Chodesh Nisan is a time when, you know, we can do something about the Gula. I want to change the subject for a moment, if I may, and put something to you, which I think is interesting, that we're talking about Gula. I mean, we all know the vitzel about the darshan that only had one drosha of Koirach, and he somehow managed always to get the drosha out to Koirach. Avarechon ben Koirach, he then packed out his drosha. So we're talking about Gula. I want to tell you something else. I'm telling you this because it's a chiddush that I thought of, and I haven't seen it, and if anyone else does see it, I'd like to know. I can't guarantee that's absolutely true, but I'd like to suggest that it might be. And it's the following. It's to do with Shemitah. We know that we are in the Shemitah year this year, and one of our kehillahs had a special evening to support Keren HaShemitah, etc. It's a very important thing. We should know that Shemitah isn't just for the farmers. You know, ultimately, everybody has to eat. Yeah, we are dependent on the fact that the farmer produces produce. So it's our mitzvah as well, not just the mitzvah of the farmer. We all know the story of Marta Bas Baisus in the story of Hanizokin, very, very rich lady, very rich aristocratic lady, had piles of silver and gold and threw it all out in the street and said, what's the use of all this? I'm starving. Okay, so the money is a lesser point. We've got to have farmers that grow something. And it's very important. And Shemitah, therefore, is not just them, Siras Nefesh, but it also should be ours as well. I'd like to suggest something to you, Rabbi Isai, in the following lines. In the Parsha of Shemitah, which is Parshas Behar, it tells us quite clearly, Sheishonim Tizra Sodecha, etc. You can then plant fields for 7 years, and in the seventh year, you should have Shemitah. In the next Sedra, in Bechukosai, where we've got the Toichocha, it tells us, in no uncertain terms, what will happen if we don't keep Shemitah. In the middle of the Toichocha, it tells us, in, you know, very, very clear language, that what follows the non-keeping of Shemitah is golus. The land throws us out. And in fact, there's a long Rashi there where he makes a calculation. Why was golus bovel, that is straight after the first base of Mikdosh, why was it for 70 years? Rashi makes a big cheshbon because of the 70 Shemitahs that we didn't keep during the first base of Mikdosh. Interesting. Very interesting, Rashi. So quite clearly, there is a relationship between not keeping Shemitah and going into Golos. May I suggest that if we reverse engineer this, maybe if we keep Shemitah, then we can get Geula. If non-Shemitah causes Golos, keeping Shemitah would bring us Geula. Now, there's some other little point I want to make. You know, every single year when Tisha B'Av comes round, we read them. We have the Chazal, which tells us Bechol Doer She'ein HaBeis HaMikdash Bono. Whenever the Beis HaMikdash is not Keilu Nechrav, and it was in every generation we are accused, so to speak, of having destroyed the Beis HaMikdash all over again. But the point is that there's a ray of hope within that, which all the Balei Hashkafa say that if it's Keilu Nechrav, that means we would have had the opportunity to build it. So the question is, well, why haven't we done so? It's 2,000 years since the last Beis HaMikdash. Why haven't all the Tanoim, the Amaroim, the Rishonim, and all the great Tzaddikim we've had along the line, why haven't they managed to build it? And how do you expect little me to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash if they haven't managed to do that? And the terrace is usually given when it's a cumulative process, and maybe the end result, what we have to contribute, will just add the last little bit. Anyway, it's a sort of shaky terrace. I'd like to offer something else. And that is to do with Shemitah. All these years, 2,000 years, Klal Yisrael have not had the opportunity to perform Shemitah, to perform Shvius. They haven't been able to do that because we haven't been in Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, one of the ingredients of bringing the Geula that we are suggesting wasn't there throughout those generations. Now, whatever your politics about Eretz Yisrael, and we're not going into that, Lemaisa, there is an opportunity nowadays to keep Shemitah. Right? That's why there's a Keren HaShemitah. So there is that opportunity. So that means that we can do something that they never could. All the generations for 2,000 years could not do. You know, it's a sort of, we can now reach the parts that other elements could not reach. So we can do our bit, that we have a unique opportunity, even though with our weakness of rookness, etc., but we can do something that nobody else could do. And maybe with this, we can, with our contribution and helping those farmers who do keep Shemitah, we can bring the Geula. Rabbi Sai, let's bring the Geula.